Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Power slams. Don't you dare be sour. Clap for your host and feel the power.
Yes, I did it. It is a new day, ladies and gentlemen, and this is Pancakes and Power Slams, episode 165. As you can already tell, I sound not as Chris Featherstone as normal. I've been quite under the weather the past few days, but I tell you what, that doesn't stop me from giving you what you want, because I'm here for the people, because it's people power, and having a sore throat and a very weak immune system the past few days, that is not going to stop me from having an amazing Pancakes and Power Slams broadcast, episode 165. And I think it was like a week after I had back surgery, like full on, I had to be off work for 6 months back, 5 months back surgery. So if that's not going to stop me from having a amazing show as always, man, being under the weather is not going to allow. It's not going to stop me at all. So I'm here. And we're going to have a good time. And hopefully, I have literally in studio, to my right, I have a cup of hot tea with all the fixings in it. And so we're going to have some fun for the next 90 minutes. And as my boy Derek says, 90 minutes is never enough. We'll be joined by Derek here soon. He's going to take over. I'll still be on the show, but he's going to take the reins for today. But in the meantime, I'm going to dedicate this evening to tag team wrestling and old school wrestling. But I was thinking about just the show this week. We were supposed to have Curtis, the Cat Hughes, but I'm not feeling well. And so we have to reschedule that for a another day. But I tell you what. When I figure that out and this weekend, and just figure out that having an interview is just not the best thing to do today at all. Speaking of that, I do have an announcement about a upcoming interview in beginning of June. It's going to be really, really, really interesting. But and we'll announce that. But since the Elimination Chamber is this Sunday, and since we're going to have the first ever tag team Elimination Chamber match, this is the first ever in over 3 years on the show the first ever Name That Tag Team Trivia Night. And everybody knows the thousands of people who listen to Pancakes and Power Slams every week or subscribe through iTunes. They know that Chris Featherstone and trivia goes together like steak and potatoes. Just, I love trivia, and I really love pro wrestling trivia. And I got to thinking, I was like, you know what? First ever Elimination Chamber tag team match. How about this? A first ever Name That Tag Team trivia night. So throughout the whole show, I'm going to either tell you the duo, so I'm either going to tell you the two people, or I'm going to tell you the tag team name. So if I tell you the tag team name, you're going to let me know the people who are in it. If I tell you the two people, you're going to let me know the tag team name. So that sounds like fun. I hope that I hope that we're having some fun here. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about this. So let's start off with this. The first name is going to be this. The first name. So you got to give me the team. The name is the Miracle Violence Connection. Not even an icebreaker this time. I'm going to hit you hard from the very first trivia question. It's the Miracle Violence Connection. Actually, one of my favorite tag teams in the 90s. I'm not going to give too much away, but I think that the pairing of these two people was absolutely an amazing idea, and I really wish that they had an opportunity to be with each other a lot longer. But one of the two people in the Miracle Violence Connection is definitely one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. I would put him in the top 10 for sure. So yeah, Miracle Violence Connection. That's the first one. Oh man, this is why I love the We Are Wrestling live chat room. I love communicating with wrestling extremists, with wrestling purists, with wrestling extraordinaires, gurus, connoisseurs, whatever you want to call them. I absolutely love it because within seconds, I already got two correct answers, Steve Williams and Terry Gordy. Another one said Dr. Def and Bam Bam. There you go. That compliments each other because that's their nicknames. So, yeah, good stuff. I remember the battle of the Bam Bams between Terry Gordy and Bam Bam Bigelow at ECW. That was a fantastic match. A lot of hype with it. And, yeah, just stuff like that is just amazing. But, yeah, I've always – I mean, Dr. Def Steve Williams, I think I said this on the show about a week or two ago. There's something about Dr. Def Steve Williams to me when I was a kid that I just wanted to emulate. Just the Oklahoma Shuffle, the Oklahoma Stampede, and just – he was just a big, thick guy that really just – he exuded a main event superstar to me. I understand the Varsity Club and just put himself in different factions and his Oklahoma affiliation, but, you know, teaming up with Bam Bam Gordy in the 90s and having their very successful Japan run was just absolutely amazing to me. And just he didn't really do his individual tenures in WCW and WWE just really didn't do him justice because there's so much about Dr. Def Steve Williams that could have been much better. Just could have been pushed so much higher. I think he was a top guy. And thankfully, Bill Watts saw that because he was a top guy in the Universal Wrestling Federation. Actually ended up being one of the he was actually one of the last champions in UWF, And so, yeah, I definitely think he was a top guy for absolutely. I mean, without question. So, yeah, big Dr. Death fan. Next trivia question, and again, please excuse, I'm not feeling well at all. So if this is definitely not the Chris Featherstone that our Pancakes and Power Slams listeners are used to hearing, but I will not let me not feeling well stop me from having a fantastic show. I appreciate your patience. I appreciate just all your love and support, and we're going to talk. We're going to have some fun. But I'll tell you what, I was watching, I've been watching a lot of CWA lately, and I remember Lance Russell. I remember him. I remember Lance Russell in his Memphis days, and I remember Lance Russell briefly in WCW. But I tell you what, I've been watching hours of the Continental Wrestling Association tape. I've actually been watching on YouTube just some old school programs from the CWA, and man, I don't remember watching CWA in detail. I remember watching a little bit of it, you know, as somehow I got access to it years ago, but I've been watching it a lot recently, the past couple of months, probably very strongly the past month or so, and oh, absolutely amazing stuff. I mean, just all the names that you can think about back in, I think it was 88 was the first episode. I saw some earlier ones, but the first episodes that I start following just weekly was dated all the way back in 88. And so at that point in time, Tracy Smothers was a rookie in the game. He's been there. He was been in wrestling for less than 5 years. Jeff Jarrett was a rookie in the game. Scott Steiner, he was a tag team champion for a little bit. You had Jeff Jarrett feuding with Robert Fuller and Dirty Dutch Mantel. Of course, we know Zeb Coulter. He was feuding with superstar Bill Dundee, and just really cool stuff. Of course, Robert Fuller. We know him as Colonel Rob Parker, who managed you name it, Bunkhouse Buck, which was Jimmy Golden, which was his CWA tag team champion partner in the Stud Stable. And then you had, who else was in CWA that was big? P.Y. Chuhai, which was Phil Hickerson. You had Action Jackson. That's the first time I remember seeing him, Action Jackson. Which ended up being in GWF with the Blackbirds with my boy Iceman King Parsons. So you had a really, really good, awesome assortment of names in the CWA. I'm trying to figure out who else was really big in Wendell Cooley. He was probably... CWA was really the only place that he was really big. You had Adrian Street was another name that was really big in CWA. You had Garvin, not Jimmy Garvin, but he had a Garvin. I don't remember his first name, but he was he played the Jimmy Garvin type of character. I believe that Billy Travis, good job, man. Absolutely, yep. He, because Billy Travis had the overalls on, and he used to keep his chickens in the desk with Lance Russell, and it was very, very interesting. And it was, yeah, Cactus Jack was in CWA as well, absolutely. But yeah, it was just really interesting to me how Scott Steiner would have that type of partner. I mean, you know, Scott Steiner wasn't as nearly as buff as he was in the late 90s, but he was still, you know, he was still a fit guy, very fit guy. And, you know, Billy Travis was not so much. He was he looked like a lost member of the Hillbilly Jim and Uncle Elmer Club. And he was really the Bruise Brothers. Yep, absolutely. But, yeah, Billy Travis was not the – it was a very odd pairing with him and Steiner. I remember they beat Golden and they beat Jimmy Golden and Robert Fuller, the stud stable. And they only had it for like a week. And the stud stable got it back like the next week. It was like a week or two. But, yeah, very, very interesting stuff. I really enjoyed, and I'm really, really enjoying just my time watching CWA. It was really cool. And then Lance Russell, I think he was like, he was in his 60s, if I'm not mistaken, at that time. He was in his 60s. And Billy Travis, I'm thinking of another person. I know Billy Travis was more, he reminded me of, he was in shape for a little bit, and then he kind of got out of shape a little bit. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out, I'm sorry about that. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out, Scott Steiner's other partner's name. I think it was Billy Travis. I think Billy Travis is the person I'm thinking of. And was not very he wasn't very, cuz I know he started teaming with Jarrett in like the 80s and like 87 or so. And then he started teaming with Mark Starr, I believe, too, for a while. But I'm thinking of, I think it was Billy Travis. I'm not quite sure. But it was some person that Steiner was teaming up with in CWA that's Grundy. That's who it was. It was Grundy. Yeah, Jed Grundy. That's who I was thinking about. Jed Grundy was the very, he looked like a lost member of the Godwins. And Grundy would would bring his chickens over to the podium with Lance Russell. And yeah, it was very, very interesting tandem there. Now, Billy Travis and Scott Steiner, I mean, they were champs twice, and they, you know, they look decent. I mean, they look like a decent tag team, but Grundy and Steiner, that just didn't make any sense at all. It was really very interesting. So Primetime Brian Lee, well, he was Brian Lee at the time, but he was a lot, he wasn't as big as he became as far as stature-wise. And I remember, I think I watched this a day or two ago. I remember when Mantel brought out a guy called the Master of Pain, I believe that's what his name was, the Master of Pain. And yeah, and we all know him to be the Undertaker. And yeah, it was very interesting to see him wrestle, because I remember seeing him wrestle as the Punisher, and him wrestling Austin in the 80s. But when he came out, Dutch Mantel brought him out as the Master of Pain, it was a very, very interesting. he didn't look as big. He was still, you know, had an intimidating stature, but he definitely wasn't the Undertaker big like we you know saw over the years. But it was very interesting seeing him. He was a lot. He was still nimble. He was still agile. He had a bunch of big legs and leg drops, and it was really interesting. So, yeah, I would suggest to anyone, just if you have some spare time, you know, spend some time, you know, just kind of exploring the CWA and having some fun with that. We'll talk more about the CWA and the Flavor of the Week topic down the line. But, yeah, you know, I was just the past, you know, especially probably about a month, but especially the past few weeks, I've been really, really getting into CWA. So it's a lot of fun. Before we get into Raw and before I allow Derek to take over, the next Name That Tag Team. Okay, so the East-West Connection. The East-West Connection. All right, while you're thinking about that, we'll be back with Raw.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, three, are mine. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we're here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God. Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings. You see in us, but our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Prizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash One Nation with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals. Using God for my defense in Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak, this too sweet.
Till the number is took back, we reppin' that work pack. The foundation shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
I know I'm not here to play. I know Chris Featherstone's not here to play. But we're here to enjoy, have more trivia. We're going to have an awesome time. I'm going to take over for a bit. I'm Derek, of course, the Pancakes and Power Slams co-host. And we're just going to keep on rolling. Of course, we're going to talk about Monday Night Raw tonight. And Raw started off with a nice memorial. It was Memorial Day to remember the veterans. So that was a great 10-bell salute. Very nice, respectful. What you expect from WWE nowadays. And that's the way it should be. Every sports, which they all do, give their respects, pay their dues to the veterans and current active people in the Army and any of the armed forces. You love them. Thank you so much for your service. After that, we have the Authority come down. The Authority starts out Monday Night Raw. That's such a genius idea that we haven't seen before. And they're coming in. You have this thing going back and forth with Rollins. Everyone's chanting, "You sold out." The same old thing every week. They talk about Dean Ambrose and seeing what's going on with Ambrose right now. And, of course, his music hits. He comes down. And what I want to hit on right now is Ambrose being in the picture for the main title. I'm okay with that. It's good to still kind of help mold his character. And it was just a couple months ago. Like he was in the Intercontinental Championship. But now he's just pushed into the world title. And let's remind everybody that Roman Reigns hasn't won the title yet. So Dean Ambrose isn't too far out of his league as far as I'm concerned. And with that being said, of course, Rollins has it. He got it in a devious kind of way, but it's kind of unexpected how they kind of brought the three back together. I didn't really see that coming a few months ago, but it's surprised. They work well with each other, so I think it's really going to be an excellent time for the three of them to mix it up. But Ambrose, they get in the melee, and they have a Justin Bieber chance going on. And it wouldn't be that bad to be Bieber. I beg to differ from that. Then a few more words, ringside chance. Roman Reigns, of course, he comes down. Then she wants Kane to announce the match, Roman Reigns versus Dean Ambrose. I'm sorry, Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns versus Kane and Seth Rollins. So another typical match that you'd almost see on Monday Night Raw. So yesterday, the Raw started out fine. I mean, again, I like to see the three of the Shield together because it was, what, a year ago now that this is when they first split, if I'm correct. So we've got good momentum going, even though they're on opposing sides. You see a nice friendship between Ambrose and Reigns. They've really got no reason to be mad at each other. But again, it's almost a level playing field, I believe. And it's really nice, common ground. They've got to fill in some time, make some great storylines until they bring back Lesnar, obviously. But enjoy it while you can, and hopefully it can stick. And things are going well. What do you think about the opening last night?
I think it was... I think it was good, actually. I'm going to tell you why I think it was good. I think it was good because I really like how they're evolving Roman Reigns. At first you had, from Fastlane on. Fastlane was a really kind of a coming-of-age match with Roman Reigns when he went against Daniel Bryan. It was a fantastic match. And then, it comes from a coming-of-age match to more of a rite-of-passage match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, which to me was the match of the night. It was a fantastic match. I've watched it multiple times, and it was an awesome, awesome match. And just the smart crowds are booing Roman Reigns a lot less, as we even saw yesterday, even with a smarky Long Island crowd booing Roman Reigns less. And I'm going to tell you why I like what they're doing. I think that the WWE is doing a very good job with writing in Roman Reigns because he's not forced. He's not just overtly a top guy. He's not even in the title picture at all now. It looks like he won't even have a match at Elimination Chamber, which is good, because it makes us want more of Roman Reigns. It leaves that element of surprise, which we didn't get a lot with Roman Reigns. That's why a lot of people didn't like him. And I kept telling people to be patient, and I keep telling people to be patient, and we're seeing it. Now Roman Reigns is getting pops because he's kind of being the bodyguard, so to speak, of Dean Ambrose. And Dean Ambrose, nobody dislikes Dean Ambrose. And aligning Roman Reigns as kind of like a muscle, so to speak, of Dean Ambrose is very, very, very good booking because you get those pops for aligning yourself with Dean Ambrose. All the while, people are starting to like you. People are starting to respect you. You're starting to get your mic work better. And I really, really like what they're doing. I like what they're doing as far as riding him right now. He's not too much. We don't see too much of Roman Reigns. He's not too much in our face. Like, people didn't like him in the beginning. But he's kind of laying in the shadows right now, which he should be. All the while, still making some type of presence known, but not too much where people would just dislike him. And so I'm all for it. I think it's a great way to write in Roman Reigns, aligning himself with Ambrose at this point.
I mean, it's great. Like, we haven't seen it in a long time, and it's just really culminated. And like you said, it gives Roman Reigns a little more time just to kind of simmer until you just let him go. So. It's exactly to the point, and with Ambrose being, but he dislikes this guy. Just an absolute marvel. I wish it would be a little more scientific and not, but it's good to see him. Just give them together. Just create a type of magic that you haven't seen in a while. It's very nice and glamorous. Getting on to it, we got Rusev against R-Truth. Well, actually, before that, you know, backstage, it caused a bit of a melee last night. You know, Renee Young was backstage, Dean Ambrose, asking him about the contract, and J&J Security gets up in his face and taunts him, then he beats down Mercury, and then he hits a cameraman. Knocks him for a whirl. It's a great stage segment. And in result is Dean Ambrose gets arrested, and he's not going to be able to sign the contract. There's a huge thing about that. It's always cool to see someone get arrested on Monday Night Raw. It reminds you back in the Stone Cold days and everything. It was a great twist to it. It was kind of weird at the end of Raw. We'll talk about that later. But that in itself was pretty decent writing. But then Truth and Rusev, it was kind of a throwaway match. Didn't really have much to it other than towards the end of the match. We've got Lana coming out, and Rusev asked her to come out, trying to try to dig where they've been going with it, saying, hey, I'll forgive you if you just take my hand, and obviously he's got an affection for her. And then he starts to berate her, and then she takes the mic and just absolutely tears him apart. I mean, that was absolutely great. A lot of people saw that coming. Goes out of the ring, and then, of course, her and Dolph Ziggler make out and have a good time. And so, you know, Rusev absolutely infuriates him. I kind of like where this is going as well. I love this storyline. With Lana kind of mixing it up, being the, I won't say devil lady, but obviously the affection in this. You know, Ziggler and Rusev probably throw down well. I mean, it's going to end up being a great angle, and you're going to have the lady involved, or they'll have a stipulation to match where they'll have Lana hanging from a cage or something. They did that with somebody. I'm trying to think, was it China? She was hanging up from the cage, and then it ended up someone jumped out of it. But.
Mm.
It's good. It's old-fashioned story writing. I like that. So that's going to be a decent match within itself. The feud's building to it at a nice pace, and we'll see where this goes, and I'm looking forward to it. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think that the match between Rusev and R-Truth was poorly booked just because, first of all, you're already going to have a lot of people you already have within the past few weeks. As soon as people found out that R-Truth was a part of the Intercontinental Championship, the list of the people in the Elimination Chamber. Now, let's get some things straight. You know, this would be R-Truth's fourth Elimination Chamber, so he's definitely not, you know, this definitely is not something that he's not been in. For one, and then for two, I mean, I shared with it, I think a week or two ago. I mean, people should not be so hard on R-Truth. Yeah, you know, he doesn't have a very impressive win-loss record. However, you know, he's a good hand. He's a solid mid-card wrestler. He's a solid wrestler, you know, who has a gimmick behind him. People still cheer for R-Truth, and he's a solid wrestler. I mean, he's a good wrestler. He's a solid name in the WWE. I call him, and I tweeted this. I tweeted this a week or two ago. I compare R-Truth to the modern day Tito Santana. I mean, I really think that. I mean, you know, and to be honest with you, R-Truth has achieved more than Tito Santana because, yeah, Santana had a, you know, tag team championship, and he had an Intercontinental Championship reign, but R-Truth has been U.S. champion, he's been WWE tag team champion, and he's also been NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So he's actually achieved more than Tito Santana. And to be honest with you, if you think of people like Ryback, if you think of people, you know, in the match like Bad News or King Barrett, those, you know, they've never been, Rusev is another person, they've never been world champ. And R-Truth can claim, he can, you know, he can lay claim as being the, as a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion and the first ever black NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So he's a solid mid-card, man. Like I said, he's a modern-day Tito Santana to me. Tito Santana, like, you know, the Survivor Series back in, what was that, 90? That's they had the grand finale match. And was that 90? I think it was 90 when they had the grand finale match. And with Tito Santana, the Ultimate Warrior, and Hulk Hogan. And so, yeah, you know, that stuff like that, you know, that's that was a big pivotal moment for Tito Santana, you know, known to be a mid-card guy, but he was able to survive on his team and be in the main event of Survivor Series. So stuff like that, you know, we'll always remember. And I think that R-Truth, you know, although, you know, he won't win any big titles or he may not even win any mid-card titles anymore, I don't think people should be so hard on R-Truth as being a part of the match. So, yeah, you know, I definitely don't think that him being in the match is a bad thing at all, actually. I think that he'll bring us some good matches. I think he'll have some good back and forth. And, you know, who knows? I think people still like shock value. And if, you know, if someone like R-Truth and Sheamus are the last two people, and R-Truth, you know, gets to the point where he's almost winning the match, I mean, similar to Santino and Daniel Bryan for the World Heavyweight Championship a few years back, people were marking out for Santino that night. So it's still there, it's still possible, and I think just having him get Rusev crushed on Monday was a bad idea, because he's already getting scrutinized for being in the match, and then you had Rusev squash him. I don't think that was written good at all. As far as Lana is concerned, you know, the segment that they had builds more animosity between the two. You know, I'm cool with that. I'm not quite sure what the ending of that's going to be, but you know, it's either going to be one of two things, it seems like. It's either a big old swerve, which I would be cool with, or it's going to make Lana like the face of women's wrestling, the Divas competition, which I'm also okay with, because they need a face. They just have a bunch of people just wrestling each other. They don't have a face, a baby face, you know, poster girl or poster diva like they did with Trish. So either way would work for me. So, you know, I'm just going to have patience over the weeks as they build it up, and I'm looking forward to see where it goes.
Yeah, and also another option they have, don't be surprised if they make Rusev turn into like a posse and crying and pleading for Lana to come back to the side and turn him into, like you saw with the Big Show where he was crying. And, you know. I mean, that's about, I can almost see WWE doing that, but I like the analogy better.
Hmm.
Then we go to the ring and we have King Barrett.
Real quick, before you get to King Barrett, I'm gonna say a quote here on RealWrestling.net live stream. First of all, that is the correct answer. Jesse Ventura and Agent Adonis. Next trivia question is high energy. High energy is the next trivia question. Real quick. Quote on here says, I remember Truth and Miz being blamed for the low buy rate of that Survivor Series, even though it wasn't their fault. And I totally agree with that, because, first of all, they main evented a match between Rock and Cena. Now, you know that was just going to be it was a total warm-up match. You know, it was given Cena and Rock kind of like a Cena Shawn Michaels type of thing. When Cena and Shawn Michaels was feuding and they had their WrestleMania match, they became tag team champions. Rock and Cena weren't tag team champions, but they had that kind of relationship, that kind of love-hate relationship. And, you know, Awesome Truth was really the pinnacle of their heel, you know, careers, you know, for Truth. It was one of his moments. I think the pinnacle of his career was when Little Jimmy first came out, and he was when he turned heel, and, you know, he said this is a conspiracy, a conspiracy, and it was feuding against John Cena, and had a match at I believe it was Capital Punishment, the only the only capital punishment pay-per-view that ever existed. There's only ever been one of them, if I'm not mistaken. He went against he main evented against John Cena. And at that time, Truth was so over that it worked. Awesome Truth, them being a tag team, it was okay. But just throwing them to the wolves of Rock and Cena, there's no way that they were going to lose, you know, that Cena and Rock was going to lose. I don't know if that was the best idea. But, I mean, I definitely think that Truth is a good hand. So, good job there as Owen Hart and Coco Beware. So, yep, I think Rusev beating R-Truth in that manner wasn't probably the best idea.
And ladies and gentlemen, I just want to point out that Chris Featherstone is sick. But when it comes to wrestling, it doesn't matter what his throat feels like. He's going to let you know his opinion. He's going to stick with it. And
yes,
that's the kind of guy we got running this show, and that's absolutely amazing. Because wrestling fans united, got the awesome blog going, we got everything going. I mean, live, we are wrestling. So back to the ring, King Barrett and Ryback. It was a decent match. Ryback's got his ribs all taped up. He starts out manhandling Barrett. You know, it goes back and forth for a while. And nails him in exchange for a two count. Gets the bull hammer ready. And Barrett slaps around with the talk trash. And, of course, Ryback just nails him with the spine buster out of nowhere. And he gets shell-shocked, and that's the way that goes. Kind of see that coming. I guess they're still trying to build Ryback to the point where, I mean, they're going to make him just annihilate the mid-card talent, but he's never going to be the talent. You know, it's more like he just kind of runs through these mid-card shows, but then again, at the end of the day, he gets his dish out to him as well. But still kind of confusing what they're doing with Ryback, what they want to accomplish with him. You know, and I like King. I hope he keeps that King role as well. You know, one of the best Kings that I can remember, other than Jerry King Lawler, was King Booker. And I love the way
yes.
he just kind of
Booker,
opened and closed his eye, blinked his eyes real quick, and just kind of had this very nonchalant way about it. I mean, that was, I just forgot all about that until recently. But that was
pinky.
So what got seen for Ryback the next few weeks?
Nothing much. They've struck out pretty much with Ryback. You know, I'm still holding on because I think that he can be. I mean, the guy hasn't even won a mid-card championship. I mean, that's the crazy part about Ryback. He's been in so many opportunities to be a top guy. I mean, his feud with Punk, his feud with Cena. You know, he's had the opportunities. He's main event pay-per-views for titles, and he's lost every time, you know what I mean? Or he didn't become champ at all. And so, you know, it's to the point right now where, you know, if I had my pick, Ryback would be walking out there the Intercontinental Champion, because I really think that Ryback, you know, is the guy. He should be one of the top mid-card guys right now in the WWE, but WWE just continues to drop the ball, and people, you know, the Feed Me More is a catchy. The Feed Me More is a brand. People are still buying into the Feed Me More chance. They like it. The brand still is working. It's thriving. But for some reason, they're not allowing, you know, they're kind of putting a glass ceiling on Ryback. Now, I understand his athleticism isn't, you know, the best in the world, but, you know, that's not necessarily a prerequisite to be a top guy, and we've seen that over the years. And I think that Ryback, if, like I said, he'd be my pick to leave champ. If they are going to put it on Sheamus, I'd be okay with the Ryback-Sheamus feud going into SummerSlam, and Ryback end up getting the Intercontinental Championship from Sheamus at SummerSlam. I'd be okay with that. So, but I think Ryback should be I think they should just lift and break the ceiling from him. And, I mean, they should give him a shot, man. Give him a mid-card title.
Yeah, it's still puzzling why they don't. The guy's been around, 3 years now, and it just keeps falling short, and they keep building him. And he should be one of the next guys on deck. I mean, he can be a believable tough guy. I mean, I'm behind a right back push, but he gets so far and they're just pulling back in faces. But, you know, he's got injuries and stuff as well, but, you know, that's another thing. And then we have another lackluster Stardust versus Neville match. You know, of course, we knew he was going to win this one. You got Bo Dallas coming out, doing ringside, and just another Neville climbs up, hits his red arrow for the win. Neville's exciting. Again, just coming out against Stardust, we all knew it was a no-brainer what was going to happen. Who was going to win? Bo Dallas. I'm not really, nobody's intimidated by Bo Dallas, so it didn't really add a whole lot to the match. Coming up next, you had Ziggler and Sheamus. Yeah, it was a great match. It was a really awesome all around. I liked it. You get the stomps and everyone starts booing. You've got a lot of heat behind Sheamus still. Not that anything, again, he's almost like a Sheamus where they go so far and they take him back. For me, Dolph Ziggler's still white hot. He's still, you know, should be on top of the mid-card scene and be an awesome, awesome opponent to ride back. And obviously, we see Sheamus. Dolph Ziggler can almost wrestle anything. I mean, he could wrestle a barrel. And it make it look believable. He's just one of those guys that just has absolutely talent just exploding out of him. So he still seems to get the short end of the stick, but, I mean, he's still relevant in this whole thing going on with Rusev. I mean, that could just be another great thing to get himself into and get on with. So anything he's a part of is really going to draw a good crowd. Sheamus is good of caring people, staying up with them, and, you know, getting them the push that they need as well. So Sheamus came out the winner. But there's other things. Went on with the Anna. Let's get on with that, Chris.
Yeah. Ziggler's always going to be a top, you know, mid-card talent. And I don't see much money. I don't see much world title money in Ziggler. But I definitely think he's a fantastic, you know, upper mid-card hand. That should be there for a while, and that is going to be really that's good. But I don't know if he's plateaued though. That's the thing. I don't know. The verdict is still out on that. As far as if Ziggler's plateaued and what's next for Ziggler, as far as really making him kind of break that mid card ceiling. I've said before, I don't see main event money in Ziggler. When they had the World Heavyweight Championship, I think that was a good thing, a good place to put Ziggler. However, just because I don't see main event money in Ziggler doesn't mean that I think that he can be WWE World Heavyweight Champion. I think what will help Dolph Ziggler is if it was more like a David and Goliath type thing. If you know, someone huge, you know, I can't see really Ziggler and Lesnar, but someone huge, you know, and just a powerhouse big guy winning the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, like a, you know, it's hard for me to say this, but like a Big Show. And, you know, you have Ziggler versus Big Show, and somehow Ziggler, you know, pulls all the odds, you know, and win, you know. Interesting comment here. I hate to compare anyone to Kurt Hennig, but because he's one of my all-time favorites, Ziggler has what he had. I agree. You know, the thing is about Hennig, he was never a main event guy. You know, he was one of the – so many people said that he's an uncrowned world heavyweight champion, which I agree, but he still he owned the mid-card. And that could be a blessing and a curse for someone like a Kurt Hennig and someone like a Dolph Ziggler. They're so good. Their wrestling abilities are so good that, you know, sometimes their character kind of gets shrouded in how good they are athletically, you know. And I always say this. I say this all the time, and I stand by it. Characters over wrestling. I will say that to the death of me. characters over wrestlers. I mean, if you looked at the Mount Rushmore of the WWE, you got Hogan, Austin, Rock, and probably Taker. You know, those four are the Mount Rushmore of the WWE. And, you know, all four of them, do all four of them have in common? They were larger-than-life characters that the whole industry, the whole company was built around the characters of them, not watching wrestling clinics of, you know, Hulk Hogan and Andre or Hogan and Bundy or, you know, Hogan and Earthquake. You know, we really didn't care about the wrestling. We were so in tune with the characters. Steve Austin was a technical wrestler when he first started Stunning Steve Austin, but he had, you know, the leg surgeries and, you know, the neck, and, you know, he became more of a character. His wrestling, the in-ring wrestling skills tanked. I mean, it took a huge dip because of injuries. But we didn't buy into Steve Austin, the wrestler. You know, that's the reason why Stunning Steve Austin was a mid-card guy. He was an awesome wrestler, but his character wasn't big enough. Stone Cold Steve Austin, his character was big enough, and that's the reason why people bought into him. The Rock has never been known to be a great wrestler. So we bought into The Rock's character. Undertaker, he's the one of the only four that has both awesome agility, awesome wrestling skills, but still, we bought into the Undertaker character. And so that's why I always say characters over wrestlers. And there's not many people that have that ability to allow their character to be at the forefront of the WWE at this point. That's the reason why, you know, people may throw tomatoes at me about this or stones at me about this, but that's why I don't see money in Rollins. And I say that, and I keep saying that. You know, I am not as critical as I was of him being champion, but Rollins isn't a big draw, and we're seeing that because he's a fantastic wrestler. And I keep telling people that I followed Tyler Black when he was in the Indies. I was a big Tyler Black fan in Ring of Honor. But he doesn't have a character that supersedes that chart, that breaks that wall, that makes him a part of the elite. And so, you know, that's the reason why people aren't as involved and aren't as geared and tuned into weekly episodes as they were, because there's not any larger-than-life characters. I think Cena kind of broke that. I think Cena made the marks the most important because he didn't have really a larger-than-life character, but the marks became so important because you got the Let's Go Cena, Cena Sucks, as he explained in his interview, in his promo at the beginning of the show. But Cena wasn't a larger-than-life character, and he kind of turned the corner of the larger-than-life characters, which I think was a detriment to pro wrestling. But, you know, that's why I like Roman Reigns. I think Roman Reigns has an opportunity to be that character. But you got so much of the smart voice that's kind of going against that right now. But at the same time, I still think he has it. But, you know, Dolph Ziggler, amazing. He's one of my favorite wrestlers in the WWE right now, but he doesn't have that it factor that kind of surpasses, you know, and put him in the upper echelon because of his character. So, awesome upper mid card guy, but, you know, not a huge main eventer.
Hey, that's a shame. Not a huge main event. I mean, he can go with anybody, but again, he just doesn't put the butts in the seats, and doggone it. That's all you can really say is that's a shame. Well, we got to go on. 90 minutes is never enough, we always say. You have the John Cena U.S. title open challenge. He had the cast of Entourage come out. I hate it when they do things like this on Raw. I mean, I know it's supposed to pump them, and, you know, they get setbacks and sponsorships and everything. But anyway, so it had to come out. And never they bring somebody, you know, in the wrestling scene. It looks so lost and just dumb up there. And it's just they bumble around and just, hey, this has been our lifelong dream to be in the ring of the WWE. No, it's not. Shut up, do your thing. Yeah, I mean, it's, I can't stand it. Anyway, if the movie's any good, who cares? I want to touch down that we saw Zack Ryder come out and didn't expect to see him pop out, but he did. And again, we knew he was going to win this match, but he put up a great fight. It was a good show. Afterwards, we had Cena, you know, give him a high five and a low five and a high ten and give him a hug and everything, raise his hand, and, which is nice. It's good sportsmanship. But, again, it kind of comes in with the smarmy John Cena trying to make him the great American hero and everyone's best friend. And, you know, that's really not the case. And it's kind of gets out that way. But after that, of course, you got Kevin Owens coming out. Really tears it up, shocks Cena by surprise, and hopefully, I've been hearing rumors, Chris, that they're going to be at the Elimination Chamber and maybe have some kind of talk between them, which would be absolutely great. I mean, he's great for the show. He's really pumped some more energy into this John Cena U.S. title character, but what are they going to do with the NXT Championship?
So, I think it's just I think it's just a pull. I think it's just a promotion. I think it's just a way to promote NXT. I think it's a great idea. I don't think Owens should win at all. We'll get to predictions later, but I don't think Owens should win at all. But I do think this is a fantastic idea that win or lose, Kevin Owens and NXT wins. I mean, there's no debating to that. The very fact that the NXT title is being hoisted up weekly on a Raw. I mean, this isn't SmackDown here. This isn't tape. This isn't main event or superstars. This is the flagship show. This is Raw that we're doing this. This is during a time, where it gets really, really heated. As far as the the segments are concerned, and the way the segments are laid out, they're doing it in very, very pivotal segments. And so the very fact that they're allowing NXT, and, Kevin Steen is a fantastic representative to have that type of invasion role that they're kind of doing with the NXT right now, but I think it's fantastic. And like I said, no matter what, win or lose, Kevin Steen and NXT as a whole wins. And I think it's a fantastic, booking John Cena and Kevin Owens at Elimination Chamber is absolutely fantastic. It's a great idea. I absolutely love it. And I'm an NXT mark. I've made it very clear. I've been to NXT Live before. It's fantastic. Actually went to one of the tapings that actually showed on the WWE Network. I love NXT. I've been, the past, couple years, I've been talking about on the show how much NXT is a fantastic brand. And I think that NXT should get to a point where, I think it was Triple H that said on the Austin podcast that Vince McMahon loves competition. And if Triple H is going to be the heir apparent of the WWE, the Triple H or Stephanie, if one of them, namely Triple H, is going to be the heir apparent of the WWE brand, there's your baby. There's NXT right there. There's your, there's your competition. There's your internal competition right there, NXT. Evolving and emerging to be such an amazing brand of what it is now. Actually taking their talents away from Full Sail University and drawing out 10,000 person crowds. And I think it's a fantastic idea to do that. So it doesn't matter if Kevin Steen loses or Kevin Owens loses in 2 minutes. It doesn't matter. NXT wins. And so I think the very fact that they allowed Steen to have the upper hand 2 weeks in a row, I mean, of course, it's, I guess I'm giving away this prediction already. Kevin Owens loses. But It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he loses in 90 seconds. NXT still wins.
It wins, and that's great. It'll be their own competition. And, I mean, obviously, TNA's out of the picture now. It always has been, as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, that's a great analogy. We want to get to the Snuka versus Paige. You got twins come out, commentary. Naomi comes out with Tamina. And makes her way out. Tamina gets a good start on her. Paige finally makes her way back. Of course, Naomi comes in, gets a cheap shot. And Paige, Paige does not win. She loses. So on that note, the Divas division is still boring, and there's really not a whole lot they're going to do. I just hope so much. They're going to bring Lana in. Lana's going to come in, and I hope so much that she becomes a stronghold and a powerhouse, because she's obviously shown that with her mic skills and her promo and her in-ring performance of just making a presence of herself. And I believe her and Paige could probably really tear the house down. And it's something that the Bellas aren't going to do, because obviously I've read recently where Brie is no longer going to be active in the meantime. She's going to be Daniel Bryan, obviously, for reasons. But I don't think one Bella can do anything on their own. It's absolutely, the Divas division's in utter chaos. But with Lana and Paige, they could really turn this thing around and make it exciting. And again, Lana has been a pleasant surprise with what she's doing now and what she's done in the past. If you didn't think Rusev was believable, you thought Lana was believable, because she's brought that Paul Heyman-esque presence to the ring in a female form, in a skinny female form, not a bloated white dude like Paul Heyman. God bless him. I miss Paul Heyman. We need to see him come back soon. So Divas division, Chris.
Well, we'll see Paul Heyman after Raw next Monday on the Stone Cold podcast, and I'm very, very looking forward for that on the WWE Network. Real quick, the Patriot and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. The Patriot and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. So again, if I say the team, give me the people. If I say the people, give me the team. The Patriot and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. Real quick, I want to give a shout out to Ring of Honor's Will Ferrara. Man, I remember watching Ron. I tweeted it during the time. I was like, wait a minute. When I showed the cameraman, it was just a side of him. I was like, it looks like Will Ferrara. And then when they did the, you know, a better shot, when they went back, you know, backstage, and Ferrara kind of denied it, and when they forced Ambrose to get arrested, I was like, well, that is it's Will Ferrara. And so kudos to that, man. I'm going to see if I can get him on the show soon. It's crazy, because I actually met Will at a ROH show, and he's loyal, man. He was putting down the ring. And he was paying his dues, and I can respect him for that. Now, I remember when I was introduced to Will, I was actually talking to ACH at the time. We were getting an interview scheduled, and he'll be on the show coming up here soon. But ACH and I were talking, and then somebody brought Will over to me. I was like, yeah, you know. But, you know, put him on the show. And I kind of passed on Will because, you know, when I think about, I love interviewing everybody. But when I think about interviewing people, I think about, like, you know, because I'm a journalist. And so, you know, top stories type of thing. You know, I've interviewed many, many people. I've interviewed people from indies. I've interviewed people on the show from OVW. So that's not, you know, interviewing people. I love interviewing people here on the show, but when I was thinking of Will, I was thinking about getting an ROH name, and at that time I was thinking about Moose, which I did have Moose on the show eventually. I was talking to ACH about getting him on the show, and that's coming in the near future. And then Will Ferrara, I was like, well, yeah, I like Will, you know, ROH Top Prospect Tournament. You know, him and Donovan Dijak, you know, tore their house down. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm going to wait on Will. And it's crazy that, you know, out of anyone, he was the guy that actually got the WWE, you know, spot. You know, granted, he was a cameraman, but it was still great. And to me, it seems like that has Jimmy Jacobs written all over it, because I know that Jimmy Jacobs is, you know, on the creative end of NXT now, and he got hired on. And so, yeah, it seems like that has Jimmy Jacobs, because I know that Jimmy Jacobs was like Adam Rose's, one of Adam Rose's rosebuds for a little bit, too. So was, Leon, what's her name? Rhea Wrestling Net knows, Mandy Leon, that's her name. I didn't need any help, obviously, because no one helped me, kind of left me out there hanging. But Mandy Leon, and she's from ROH as well. And yeah, when I saw Will there, I said, "Oh wow, that's awesome!" And so we'll get Will on the show here soon. But as far as the Divas are concerned, I mean, that was the worst match of the night. That was probably the worst. That was probably the worst Divas match of the year. And Paige is probably my favorite Diva. No, she is. She's my favorite Diva, hands down. Her and Naomi were kind of fighting at number one for me, but I don't like Naomi's heel turn whatsoever. So it's clear-cut Paige right now. But that match was absolutely, it was cringeworthy. It was horrible. There were so many botches in that match. They could not cue. I mean, you can tell, and read JTG's book, and we'll talk about that probably in the coming weeks. JTG's book says it very clear as far as, you know, whether two people actually talk about their match beforehand or they just call it on the fly. And that really seemed like a call on the fly match. That was horrible. There were so many botches and it was sad to look at. And so I don't ever want to see something like that again. And then at the end of the match, Tamina won. So it made it even worse. I mean, no disrespect to Tamina. She's a great talent. But that match was horrible. So that's really, sadly, that really is a representation of the Divas division, not the NXT Women's division, because they blow the main roster out the water. But that's really a representation of the WWE Divas division. Stars and Stripes is the correct answer. Who were the gangsters? Who were the gangsters? But, yeah, that was absolutely horrible, Derek.
Yeah, it was horrible. But that's to be expected by the Divas. That's a shame. But coming up next, you had the New Day versus Cesaro, Tyson Kidd versus Los Matadores, The Ascension, Primetime Players, and the Lucha Dragons. It wasn't really much of a match. It maybe lasted 30 seconds and then turned into a giant ring of chaos. But somehow the New Day came out of the ring to be the winners, I guess, by disqualification. They're the legal man. I'm really not too sure how that works, but you know, it's another throwaway match just to fill some time so they can have an extra 10 minutes to make the ending of Raw somewhat good. But, you know.
Yeah, I was a fan of it. I like it. I think that allowing the tag team division to really shine. I mean, come on now. This really seems like this has Triple H written all over it. Because, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, he was commenting about how he wanted the tag team division to be elevated, and we didn't really see that for a number of years. But finally, I mean, this was long, long overdue. And I really, really love what I see right now with the tag team division. And I'm so glad that, you know, the mega powers or the meta powers or whatever, you know, they're not in it, because I think that that's just they're just no good at all. seems like Heath Slater and Adam Rose is forming a team. I'm glad that they're not in it because they're just like, you know, thrown together tag teams. But these six teams are the teams that should be in it. If I had one choice, I would trade the Los Matadores for Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. But, you know, and that's just because I think that Harper and Rowan would be a better fit in these six tag teams. However, though, Los Matadores, they're unfortunately, you know, forced to have a kind of a lackluster gimmick. But, you know, Primo and Epico as a team is fantastic. I mean, they're former tag team champions. And so awesome talent, you know. Los Matadores as a team isn't very, you know, compelling, but they're a great talent. But, I kind of wish Harper and Rowan, since they officially got back together, I kind of wish that they were inserted in this somehow. I think that would have been a good move.
Yeah, that would have been a good move. And, yeah, I mean, I see how it's going to lead into the Elimination Chamber and sure what that's all about. But it just seemed like a filler and wasn't too thrilled with it. But then we get to the ending, which is kind of weird. They come out, the Accordia comes out, Dean Ambrose is unable to sign her contract. Obviously, we knew that was going to lead up to it. And just when they're going to announce it, that everything costs, of course, Roman Reigns comes down. I mean, just tackles everybody, throws the ring, goes nuts. And then we see Dean Ambrose back up a paddy wagon to the – he must have paid his bail, or somebody did. Maybe the fans got together and, you know, as much as his bail, and we'll pay it. So he comes out, backs it up, and he walks out wearing a hat, and he looks like a reminiscent of the Big Boss Man. It's kind of a corny ending, kind of like I remember when Mankind and I think it was Chainsaw Charlie came running down when they went to the hospital. They still had their IVs connected to them. And, of course, he had the beer truck and Zamboni and Kurt Angle's the milk truck. I mean, it's reminiscent. It was great. It was funny. But it added a bit to it. And so, obviously, Dean Ambrose got the last laugh. Raw goes off the end of that. It was corny. But again, I marked out and thought it was exciting. It was fun for the entertainment aspect of it and just kind of build the character of Dean Ambrose. I'm all for it. I don't mind it at all. What do you think?
I liked it. I think it was good. Real quick, Mustafa New Jack, yes, the gangsters. The next question is the Edgeheads. The Edgeheads. But, yeah, I think I liked it. You know, it was I keep saying characters over wrestlers. I think wrestling is I love wrestling. And people know that I've been watching wrestling all my life. I love watching wrestling. But I think wrestling matches are good mid-card, upper mid-card matches that will steal the show. But at the end of the day, the characters, good job, Hawkins and Ryder, the characters is what it's all about. People have to create a character to make us want to buy into you from a long-term perspective. And I think that Dean Ambrose is kind of – I think he showed that on Monday. I think, you know, the pulling back in the arena with the police truck, you know, that was reminiscent of Steve Austin, you know, pulling in with the Zamboni with the milk and you know, Kurt Angle. And I think that stuff like that is what people are going to buy into. And I appreciated it. I liked it. I think it was a good idea kind of having that lunatic fringe, because every time I think of Dean Ambrose, I think of Jake Roberts and Brian Pillman. And what was the common thread between those two? Fantastic talent, some of the best psychology in the business, could cut a promo to save someone else's life, but they were never world champions. In a way that they were kind of hindered by their character in a way. And I see that with Ambrose, but I, you know,
kind of adding more layers in his gimmick, like we saw on Raw, was I became more invested, and that's what I want, you know, for Dean Ambrose. And I've said this before, Ambrose flatlined to me for quite some time. Almost immediately after the Shield broke up, he feuded with Rollins, and their matches were good, but it didn't really do much for him. And then he feuded with Wyatt, that didn't do anything for him. He was the one that started, you know, confiscating the Intercontinental Championship, you know, just to, you know, be the one who didn't win it. So Ambrose hasn't really, the year that the Shield's been broken up, I think that Ambrose had the worst spot of the three. And I definitely appreciate that Ambrose is starting to evolve. I think now more than ever, we're starting to see more layers in Dean Ambrose's character, which I like. I still don't see main event world champion in that, but I do see a gradual move to really having the character that people are buying into. I think he has the potential to do that. And, of course, his athleticism and his in-ring work backs it up. So, we'll get to predictions here in a minute. But it just seems like we're going to see a bunch of throwaway matches until SummerSlam, which, you know, originally it's Brock versus Rollins, but now, you know, there's rumors of the match that I wanted to happen, which is Triple H versus Rollins. The only thing is I don't want it to happen for the title, though. That's one thing I don't want to see. But, if things go as normal, as originally planned, you know, we're going to see Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. So, from now, for the next 3 months, for the next, you know, almost 3 months, we're going to have to see throwaway matches. So, and it's unfortunate because, you know, we don't want to see throwaway matches because we know that Rollins somehow is going to be champ. It becomes the predictability level kind of diminishes the anticipation of the match. But, you know, it's still a good way to kind of suspend us from reality a little bit. And I think Dean Ambrose being in this match, being this kind of throwaway main event, I think that Dean Ambrose for Elimination Chamber was a good pick for to go against Seth Rollins because, you know, this pay-per-view isn't going to, you know, the Intercontinental Championship is the kind of the focal point of this of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. So we don't need no title. We don't need the world title to change hands anyway. So. But it'll be a good match. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's going to be an awesome match. You can't wait to sink into it. And Elimination Spur is something that, you know, it's our point of the week, obviously, ladies and gentlemen. One of those, it's like a modern day, you know, cage match almost. Except you got these pods. Now, that's kind of silly, but, you know, they do what they do. But it's been like one of the really brutal things. I mean, I think Shawn Michaels won the very first one. I remember him being in that. I think Jericho, there's a few others I haven't really thought about it who are in there. Really, really, I'm looking forward to this pay-per-view. I really am. Just for the fact I want to see the main event. I like to see, you know, the tag team championship and the Elimination Chamber. So, yeah, you'll have a few gaudy matches to begin with, but the pay-per-view itself should be fine. It's kind of nice to just do it on the WWE Network and kind of an exclusive thing. So hopefully people aren't buying this stuff on pay-per-view still. If you are, well, more power to you. I wish I had your money. Other than that, good thing for the WWE Network. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have the WWE Network. It took me a while to get it. I got it, and it's good. Anybody who's a wrestling fan should have it. Why don't you? If it's because you don't have $10 a month, I understand. Honestly, you'll never leave your house. That's the thing. And that's part of the downfall of it. But anyway, I don't want to talk about it because I might get paid to. Pancakes and Power Slams, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Featherstone is in the house with us, of course. We got the podcast going. We've got the live chat. We got trivia. Did anyone answer the right questions on the last
Hawkins and Ryder for the Edgeheads. The next trivia question is the Hellraisers. And real quick, we are going to start the Flavor of the Week.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, Derek, 2009 Elimination Chamber, what you got?
2009, I guess Triple H won the whole thing. It's a big in there.
I think Kozlov was in that one, too.
Kozlov, yeah. Kozlov, Vladimir. I love his name. I want to name my son Vladimir if I ever have one. Well, I guess it depends. But it was a good, again, he has 2009, Triple H was still somewhat relevant in the WWE as far as the in-ring performer goes. But, yeah, it goes. I mean, what did you think about it? Was it, I think it was it No Way Out where that took place, or?
Yep. There was No Way Out. 2009, they had a SmackDown and a Raw. That's when that split was still around. But that was the year that Edge took out. Edge lost his – he was champ for a SmackDown. He was WWE champ, and he lost. That's when Triple H won. And then he took out Kofi Kingston in the main event and won the World Heavyweight Championship. That's when John Cena had it. So, yeah, that was actually a pretty memorable one because a lot of people were saying that Randy Orton should take out R-Truth, you know, like Edge did 6 years ago with Kofi Kingston. But, you know, I think that was a pretty memorable one just because of what Edge did. Losing the WWE Championship and then winning the World Heavyweight Championship. 2010, it was actually the birth of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. John Cena won the WWE Championship, and then Chris Jericho won the World Heavyweight Championship, defeating the Undertaker last when Shawn Michaels came out and super-kicked, or as Steve Corino would say, super-kick! The Undertaker.
Yes, and Jericho won. I remember the Y2J, Truth, John Cena, Rey Mysterio, and CM Punk was in there. And yeah, it was a 20. It was the first Elimination Chamber like actual name pay per view. And with Y2J winning, I always loved that. Undertaker, R-Truth, John Morrison. He's a talent that I somewhat miss a little bit. It was a great time. So the first actual Elimination Chamber pay per view wasn't too bad. It wasn't as good as the first one. But kept going for a while. So, I think 20 of them. We had Edge won that.
Yep. 2011, Edge won it as well. He defended his World Heavyweight Championship. and then it was a number one contenders match for the WWE Championship was the other chamber match. John Cena won that one for the WWE Championship. So... beat it. It was a decent selection. And speaking of R-Truth, like I said, R-Truth was in the first Elimination Chamber, you know, main event, the one that Jericho won, and he was also in the 2011 Elimination Chamber for the WWE Championship number one contenders match. So, I mean, we gotta think about these things. R-Truth was in the he was in the runnings to become WWE champion at WrestleMania. So, absolutely. There you go. Great job. The Hellraisers were Hawk and Sasaki. Yeah, absolutely. They were in Japan. They were not the Royal Warriors. That's when Hawk broke up with Animal for a little bit and teamed up with Kintsugi Sasaki in Japan. So 2012, we got CM Punk and Daniel Bryan winning their respective championships, and we talked about it earlier. Santino was, I think, the SmackDown Elimination Chamber was not very good at all because I remember they had Kali in it. And again, the Elimination Chamber 2012 for the WWE Championship, guess who was in the match? R-Truth. So, so he was 2010, 11, and 12. He was in the Elimination Chamber main event matches. So that's my point right there. He hasn't, he's been important as far as, you know, Elimination Chamber matches. But yeah, I definitely remember Daniel Bryan. He was a heel at the time, and he was World Heavyweight Champion, and Santino was the runner-up, and people just was marking out when Santino almost beat Daniel Bryan.
And even though it's talking about R-Truth, we ought to make a meme out of it. Who won the match last night? We did the John Cena wrestle? I'm like, yeah, forget who, probably R-Truth. And R-Truth is just the answer to anything wrestling that you don't know for sure, but probably a good chance that you're right, that he was there. So... The 2012, yeah, I mean, the SmackDown has always been the B product as opposed to Raw. And it just goes to show it always will be. You know, that was a pretty bad Elimination Chamber. It wasn't that great.
Yeah, it wasn't at all. So 2013 was horrible to me because it was Swagger. That's when he won. It went against Del Rio at that WrestleMania. Jericho, Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry, Kane, and Randy Orton. The people in it were cool, but Swagger, out of anybody winning it, was just a bad idea to me.
Yeah, Swagger. I mean, where's he been the last couple months? It's been a while since we've seen him. And in 2013, he won the Elimination Chamber, but again, nothing really came out of that. He defeated Chris Jericho, which has been kind of a trend lately, which stinks. And it did. Mark Henry's in there. He was kind of a stink along with Kane, but. Yeah, it was just another pay-per-view. I don't remember. I can barely remember it, but somehow you do, so. All right.
Yep. 2014. How about this? 2014, last year, was Christian's first ever Elimination Chamber match. That was interesting that out of any, like, just anyone, you would never guess that it was Christian's first Elimination Chamber match. It just seemed like he would be in a lot more. Cesaro was in that match, too. It was for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. That was a big push for Cesaro. Randy Orton retained it, but it was a pretty decent match.
Yeah, it was okay. You know, Orton won, obviously. I mean, it's always good to see Christian. He's no longer around. However, John Cena, Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, I mean, pretty much at that time, they were all very, on their, Cena was already established, obviously. Sheamus has always been the best mid-carder, at least in his mind, but he's been a solid mid-carder. Daniel Bryan was on fire as well. Cesaro, a touch of, I think that's when he was with Paul Heyman, probably. And Chris just being an old-time favorite, so it was great, and I was very happy with it.
Yep, absolutely. And real quick, let's get to the predictions. All right, we have Neville and Bo Dallas.
Neville.
Oh yeah, hands down. right. Triple threat match: Nikki Bella, Paige, Naomi. Who wins or retains the Divas Championship?
I want to take a long shot and say Paige.
For some reason, I think they're going to give it to Naomi. I think they're going to give it to Naomi. I'm a May Yay. that song was just horrible too. But I think they're going to. There would be no payoff because Naomi, you know. Lost, you know, she wasn't able to win the championship at Extreme Rules. So, yeah, I think that, or Payback, I think it was. Yeah, Payback. I think Naomi takes it. Cena and Owens.
Oh, Cena, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Cena, absolutely. Who wins the Intercontinental Championship chamber match?
I'm believing. I think Bigman's going to win.
I'm going Sheamus. Who wins the tag team one?
Tag team, I'm going to say New Day's probably going to retain it.
Absolutely. New Day for me as well. And then finally, Rollins and Ambrose for the title.
Rollins.
Absolutely. All right, and then Pancakes of Power Slam's Aftermath trivia question for the We Are Wrestling chat room. The original Midnight Express, as we go off the air, go to wearewrestling.net or wawnation.com, revamped, and answer that, or tweet at Crave Wrestling, the original Midnight Express. Enjoy Elimination Chamber, and we will see you next week. Until then, have a good week. God bless. Daddy loves Ian and Elijah. Good night. Bye-bye.